Being a prophet is a really tough job. Poor Elijah. Very few of the prophets in the Bible live to the end of their natural lives. They just don't. And at this particular time, Elijah was trying very hard to be the only, the biggest, the most important, the most powerful prophet in a very broken land. This is after Samuel had anointed Saul as king over Israel, and then David, and then Solomon, who was a very wise king, but then got into a lot of trouble because, do you remember what he did? He built the temple, and he was very wise. But one of the things he did to bring peace to the nation was by marrying the daughters of all of the foreign kings, which worked very, very well. The problem was they all brought their own religions with them, and he started dabbling in them. And so God said, all right, this cannot stand. As soon as Solomon is gone, the kingdom is going to split. And it did. And so then you have northern Israel and southern Israel. And they're always fighting with each other. And because they're not united, they're always fighting with all of their all of the other nations around them as well. And so Elijah is in the midst of all of this. And one of the leaders, the first one to come after Rehoboam, was King Ahab. And King Ahab married Jezebel. And Jezebel was from another nation that worshipped Baal. So she started building all of these altars to Baal and started worshipping this god, which demanded human sacrifice. This god could guarantee, apparently, fertility and prosperity, money, wealth, all of these things, if you but sacrificed your firstborn child or any other victim, willing or not. And we think back to times like this and think, thank God times have changed. Thank goodness we're in a civilized society that does not demand human sacrifice for prosperity and fertility. But when you look at the political climate in this country, when you look at how many people suffer so that a few can gain immense riches, when we talk about idolatry and what we worship and what we say is okay and what we put as our priority in our life, this story suddenly becomes very relevant. So Jezebel and Ahab not only worshipped Baal, and Ahab was particularly problematic because he was claiming to be king of Israel, but then worshipping a false god. At the same time, they were incredibly corrupt leaders. In fact, we will be studying in a few weeks the story of how Ahab sees a piece of land that he really wants, but unfortunately it's owned by somebody else. It's owned by just a typical citizen of the nation of Israel. But it's a really prime piece of land, and Ahab wants it. And so he goes to the man, he says, sell it to me. And the man says, no, are you kidding? This land has been in my family for generations. We have vineyards, we have orchards, it sustains us, we have history here. I could not ever, ever sell this land. And so Ahab goes home and he cries to Jezebel. He pouts. He whines. He kvetches. And Jezebel helps him hatch a plan to get this guy falsely accused and then put in prison and then executed. All based on false pretenses. Because if there's no landowner, then the land becomes available for sale and they take it. And so Elijah is aware of all of this. And as prophet, prophets don't always predict the future. People think that they do, but they don't. What prophets do is they point out the truth of the situation that other people don't want to see. That's what usually gets them killed. Predicting the future, who cares? But if you point out the truth of the situation in regards to idolatry, in regards to corruption, in regards to leadership, people who are very, very powerful, you point out their failings, they often don't respond very well. And that's exactly what happens to Elijah. He starts pointing all of this stuff out. He starts going tete-a-tete with Jezebel and Ahab. And he has a few small victories, but in the end, they are king and queen of that nation. They do control the army, and they end up retaliating, and Elijah has to flee. Elijah has to flee. And that's when he starts having his really bad day, because he's all by himself. He's out in the wilderness. He runs up a mountain to hide, and when he gets there, he realizes he's been traveling for a couple of days, and he has no food on him. And you know, not only is that dangerous, it also changes our frame of mind. If you've ever gone the whole day and forgotten to eat breakfast and skipped lunch because you were too busy, by the time you get home at night, you're in a completely different foul state of mind than you would have been if you had eaten properly all day. Do you understand what I mean? So that's where Elijah finds himself. He's frightened. He's angry. He is completely overwhelmed by all the bad stuff that he is seeing in society, much like if you've skipped lunch all day and then you go watch the evening news. It's really hard to absorb. It's really hard to absorb. So he is ready to give up. And he starts praying and he starts saying things like, God, why would you ask me to do this work? Why would you have me work so hard only to end up dying in the end? I don't understand what the whole point is. And he's got a big case of it's not fair and why me? And it's not fair. It's not fair. When we look at the world is not fair. When we look at the haves and the have-nots, the world is not fair. When we look at how many people's lives are sacrificed physically, financially, emotionally, so that other people can have whatever they want, life is not fair. And when you really, really, truly understand how unfair the world is, it can feel overwhelming. And in your own personal lives, there have always been times when we've had bad days. These little kids that you saw up here, little Sean and Allison and Jacob, who's not a little kid, he's a big kid now. But they're only, what, a couple years old? How old is Allison? 3? She's 5? She's 5 now? She's had some pretty terrible days. She fell asleep in her own cereal and it spilled everywhere, you know? And she's only 5. We've all had way, way bad days. Worse than that. So what do we do in all of these situations? What do we do when life is overwhelming? What do we do when it becomes too much for us? What do we do when we can't see a way out? Well, in this situation, we see some very interesting things. First of all, God sends an angel. God sends the original. This was the original casserole brigade. You know what I'm talking about? When you have a bad day and church folks show up at your house with a casserole or a cake, or something homemade, that's what happens. That's what happens with Elijah. God sends him an angel with some food and some water to help pull him out and sustain him. Because not only do they know that he's hungry and that's affecting his perspective on the world and his troubles, but they also know that he has more journey that he has to do, and so he must have sustenance. And so he sends him food a couple of times. That mountain, as far as it is from civilization, it is a safe place. It's a sanctuary, and nobody can get to him there. Nobody knows that he's there, and he has some downtime, and that's important. And the third thing is, God responds to him. Not in a way he's expecting. You know, how many of us have seen on the news, we'll see a big tragedy, a natural disaster, and there's always some wackadoodle minister that says, well, this is clearly God acting to punish us for something. Because oftentimes that's where people look. They look for the big signs. They look for the big travesties. They look for gigantic flashing lightning in the sky to get an answer to their prayers. And that's where Elijah looks. He looks to the violent wind that's so violent it's blowing rocks off the mountain. But that's not where God is. And then there's this huge earthquake. And he says, oh, that's the God answering me. No, it's not. And then there's a fire, a raging fire. And he says, that must be it. No, that's not. That wasn't it. It wasn't until all of that settled down and there was a clear silence, an audible silence. So quiet, it's hard to imagine. Here in the city, we're always surrounded by noise, whether we realize it or not. We get used to the sounds of traffic. We get used to the sounds of people. We get used to the sound of the train going by. We get used to airplanes going overhead, but to be in such a still silence that it's audible, that's where he heard God's voice, was when he finally stopped. Stopped wailing, stopped whining, stopped railing, stopped searching, and just sat. And that's when God responded. Again, because he'd already sent food, right? He'd already given him a safe place to be. At this point, he told him two things. He told him that he was going to go anoint some people, some new leaders, And he was going to go anoint another guy named Elisha, who was going to be his helper, so he wouldn't have to be a prophet all by himself anymore, that he could train so that he could know. He could know that at a certain point, when he wasn't able to be prophet anymore, someone else could take this over, so he didn't have to worry about it, which is a tremendous relief. It's like three words in this whole story. But sometimes when you feel like you have to do everything yourself and you can't ever put it down or take a break from it because there's no one else to help, that's when people can burn out so quickly. That's when people feel the most trapped, is when you feel like you have all the responsibility and so little control over the situation and you got to do it all by yourself. And so God sends him a helper. And he tells him about the new leadership, which means, guess what? This situation with these leaders will not last forever. One of my favorite passages in the Bible is where it says, it came to pass. It came to pass. Favorite passage. It came to pass. This will not last forever. No matter how bad it was, no matter how many ups and downs, no matter how much of a roller coaster it was, no matter how much this story is about to make you cry, it's all over now because nothing lasts forever. That is the response that God gives to Elijah. Sustain yourself, take care of your physical needs, eat, drink, stay in a quiet, safe place. Which when people come to me in crisis, that's generally how I respond. I listen, you know, we counsel, we figure out a plan going forward, and I always ask, have you eaten today? Have you eaten today? What did you eat? Did you eat protein or did you have, you know, a cup of coffee and a donut? Let's make sure you have something to eat and something to drink. And is there something quiet you can do today to recenter yourself? Because that can do more. That can do so much more to get you through, to take the edge off, than almost anything else. So he takes care of him. And he reminds him, you are not alone. This is not all up to you. I have a much bigger plan, and you are just a very small part of it. And I'm going to send helpers to you. Everybody in the Bible got helpers. Moses didn't want to do it all by himself. God sends him Aaron to help him. Jesus was all by himself, but he had his disciples with him. All the prophets had helpers. Even Isaiah had a wife. He had somebody there to help him. And so these two things, these three things actually, one, take care of your needs and let other people help you with that. Let the Castro Brigade do its job. Two, remember that you're not alone. God will send you helpers. Three, this too shall pass, no matter what you're going through, no matter how hard it seems, no matter how overwhelmed you are, it will not last forever.